Hello everyone, welcome to episode 2 of Shark Snippets, the bite-sized podcast for anyone who loves or wants to learn about sharks, skates and rays. My name is Josh and I'm a marine biologist who specialises in shark ecology. Okay, so let's dig our teeth into the first snippet, the species of the week. This week's selected species is the unusual and obscure Greenland shark. The Greenland shark is part of the dogfish order and the family commonly referred to as sleeper sharks. The Greenland shark is known to grow up to 7.3 metres or 24 foot and can get as heavy as 1,200 kilos or 2,645 pounds. Although generally they average around 400 kilos and between 2.5 and 4.5 metres in length. The Greenland shark's age is possibly one of the most amazing facts of any known shark. The oldest Greenland shark is known to be between 272 to 512 years old, which is crazy. And the study which found this out used carbon dating to analyse the samples of lens tissues from 28 individual Greenland sharks' eyes. Scientists from the study estimated that the two largest sharks were around 335 to 392 years old. But bear in mind that is obviously just an estimate. However, even with the lowest part of their age range being 272 years old, it still makes the Greenland shark the longest living vertebrae known to science. And it's remarkable to think that a shark could outlive humans across three generations. Greenland sharks are known to inhabit cold water environments between minus 1.6 and 16.1 degrees Celsius, which is between 29 and 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Their geographical range extends from the Arctic Ocean to the Northern Atlantic Ocean and across Northern Europe and also Northern America. The Greenland shark is one of only two known shark species that can tolerate the Arctic temperatures all year round. The Greenland shark has been visually recorded to a depth of 2,200 metres, which is around 7,200 foot. So how can Greenland sharks survive in these ridiculously cold oceans where other shark species can't? Well, like other sharks, they all contain urea and what's known as trimethylamine oxide, or TMAO. However, unlike other sharks, they have both of these in very high concentrations, and they act together as a natural antifreeze. Both urea and TMAO are extremely toxic, but that hasn't stopped humans eating them. In Iceland, Greenland shark is considered a national dish. However, in order for it to be consumed safely, it has to be fermented and left until the toxins naturally secrete out of the flesh. Greenland sharks are known to hunt seals and fish, but are believed to primarily be scavenger feeders that will consume anything they come across which seems edible. So some of the stranger items that have been found in their stomachs include dogs, reindeer, horse, moose, a polar bear, and even humans. All of these contents listed have come from scavenging and not from active hunting. Greenland sharks have a unique friend often found attached to them, a species of copepod or invertebrate that attaches itself to the eyes of Greenland sharks. This parasite anchors itself into the eye and can cause lesions on the cornea, which can result in blindness. However, due to the low light, dark environments that the Greenland shark lives in, it's believed that the parasite doesn't really affect them. Also, approximately 90% of the Arctic population of Greenland sharks are hosts for the copepod, but only 10% of individuals observed in St. Lawrence Bay by researchers have been seen with it. The Greenland shark is listed as near threatened on the IUCN Red List. They used to be commercially fished for their liver and oil meat, with catches reaching up to 32,000 sharks per year in Greenland alone. Commercial fishing for them stopped in 1960, but it's believed that the historical fisheries have had a lasting impact on their populations. And this would certainly make sense for a species that is believed by scientists to only become sexually mature around 156 years old, plus or minus 22 years. With no more commercial fisheries, the main threats they face are being caught as bycatch in trawl, gillnet and trap fisheries. Unfortunately, there are very few places in the world where you can dive or observe Greenland sharks in the water. But hopefully one day I will get the chance to see them up close and personal. So now on to sharks in the news. The first article I will be talking about links in slightly with last week's news story about shark mitigation in Australia. As I mentioned in last week's episode, shark mitigation is a complex issue, and I brought to light one of the methods the Australian government is trying to use to manage the issue, and that was the smart drumlines. This week, I'm going to be talking about the idea and execution of an app by 15-year-old Sam Albin. This app is called Sharkmate. Sharkmate is aimed to warn users about the probability for a shark sighting at a beach. Ultimately, the app rates beaches on a scale of 0 to 10, depending on the likelihood for an incident to occur. The app uses 13 factors within its algorithm to determine the risk level for each beach. Some of these input factors include the presence of lifeguards, historical shark data, water temperature, and rainfall. The article doesn't explain why these factors are useful. However, lifeguards are fairly obvious as they're trained to sight and deal with shark or with the presence of sharks at beaches, which would obviously lower the risk of an incident occurring. I'm unaware of the specifics of what historical data is being used within the algorithm. However, it could be fishing data to determine where specific species of shark are known to occur relative to those beaches, or it could even include previous locations of shark attacks. Water temperature is known to be a significant factor affecting shark migration or movement, and I presume that the rainfall factor considers increased surface runoff with increased rainfall, causing more sediment to be distributed into the water, reducing water visibility, and therefore increasing the risk of an attack through something like mistaken identity. So the app's creator, Albin, has since partnered with the University of Wollongong, excuse my pronunciation, a little bit tricky on that one, which is working on a low-cost shark monitoring program called Project Airship. The project involves a blimp with a mounted camera that detects sharks in real time and reports back to an app. A pilot study was conducted and was successful, with the blimp sending a notification to an Apple Watch app once the shark was detected. Obviously, that technology requires the user to have a smartwatch. However, with technology becoming more and more integrated into our everyday lives, this is definitely a low-cost step in the right direction, and hopefully will be continued to be developed. It's worth remembering that if you're using an app like Sharkmate, or even a real-time notification system, it will not completely eliminate the potential for an attack to occur. However, it will certainly heavily reduce the risk. So if you're a listener in Australia or planning on going to Australia, then the app is currently only available on iOS, obviously Apple software, with 150 beaches currently listed and rated. The app will hopefully be scaled up with more beaches in Australia, and they are ideally planning to expand into the USA as well, with an Android version also coming. So, the next article is about attacking bacteria with shark skin inspired surfaces. So, shark skin consists of tiny diamond tooth-like structures known as dermal denticles that are smooth if dragging from the front to back and rough if going from the back to the front. The technological application of shark skin, or the tiny teeth they consist of, is nothing new. Their unique diamond shape that creates tiny turbulence and reduces drag has seen similar texture designs being applied to aircraft, military ships, and competitive sailing boats to make them more efficient. And between 2008 and 2009, shark skin shaped materials were applied to Olympic swimmers' wetsuits, which resulted in 140 world records being broken before any other materials, such as the ones used, were banned in 2010. So this article, however, is about scientists developing a coating infused with antimicrobial agents that has the diamond-shaped texture like shark skin. So in the US alone, more than 2 million infections and 23,000 deaths are caused by bacteria every year. And with the general overuse of antibiotics, drug-resistant bacteria are on the rise. People already in hospital, either battling illness or have compromised immune systems, are at high risk for contracting infections from the smallest things, such as touching a contaminated doorknob or bed rail. The idea is that high-touch surfaces, such as doorknobs and bed rails, could be covered in a coating that reduces the ability of bacteria to adhere to surfaces and therefore fight the spread and growth of microbes. So the material that has been developed so far is called Sharklet AF, and the initial test of just the shark skin shaped material reduced the attachment of E. coli by 70%. With the scientists striving for further reduction, they added UV-treated nanoparticles, which killed off over 95% of E. coli and 80% of Staphylococcus. I personally think discoveries like this are amazing, especially with the application coming directly from nature. It really does make you wonder what other medical discoveries or technological advances are going to be made in the future from scientists investigating the marvels of nature. As with all the articles, the links for both of them, if you want to go check them out, will be in the description of the podcast. So now for sharks in science. And keeping with the sharks and technology theme, the scientific paper we are going to investigate today is about using unmanned aerial vehicles, also known as UAVs or drones, to investigate shark and ray densities in a shallow coral lagoon. So from here on in, I'll be referring to the unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, just as drones. So aerial surveying is not a new method to remotely survey sharks, skates, rays, or even other marine animals, and has been used for surveys in locations such as shallow water reefs or surf zones of beaches, which are not easily accessible or even accessible at all by boats or even divers. However, traditional aerial surveys have been conducted with planes, helicopters, or gyros, causing them to be expensive and carry a risk to the observer. With the recent boom in affordable recreational drones, it has begun to allow research scientists and non-governmental organisations, a unique low-cost remote surveying method. Drones operate over small areas and at low altitudes, which are limited to the operator's line of sight, essentially how far they can see the drone. And drones nowadays either come with a built-in camera or will have one attached. So in this study, a DJI Phantom 2 was used with a GoPro Hero 3 mounted underneath. And additionally, the GoPro had a polarized filter attached to reduce the glare off the water. This study was conducted in the inner waters of the northern coast of Moorea, an island located in French Polynesia, where shark tourism, including provisioning, which again is where animals are baited and fed, has occurred for 20 years. The study wanted to estimate densities and the impact of provisioning on pink whip rays and blacktip reef sharks. So to do this, the researchers determined two survey blocks with three parallel transects orientated perpendicular to the coast. The middle of one block contained the provisioning site, whilst block two didn't contain any provisioning locations. There's some great pictures within the article showing the survey blocks and transects, so definitely worth checking them out. And each transect was 400 meters long, and the drone was flown at an altitude of 12 meters at 2 meters per second. The GoPro was set to record at 1080p resolution and 30 frames per second. All six transects were flown on 10 different days in the space of 24 days in July 2014. The flight time was between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. in the morning, when the glare and wind tended to be absent. So the results from this study, actually three different species of shark or ray were seen, with a total of 152 sightings of blacktip reef sharks, 99 sightings of pink whip rays, and two sightings for oscillated eagle rays. Additionally, sea turtles were also seen on three occasions, although the species couldn't be determined. Again, within the article, there are some really nice pictures, again, aerial pictures, showing both a whip ray and a black tip from the surveying transects. So yeah, definitely worth checking those out as well. Really cool. And so the study found that the average abundance of sharks and rays was significantly higher at the provisioning sites, and that the numbers of sharks and rays were significantly different between the three microbe habitats of barrier reef, sand flats, and channels, with higher densities found in the barrier reef and the channel habitats. So with these results, it seems that the provisioning activities are causing sharks and rays to spend prolonged periods in relatively confined areas. However, due to the short time frame and therefore lack of repeats within this study, it's not possible to definitively say that the differences in densities are due to that provisioning. Additionally, other factors such as time of day or differences in topography might influence the results found. But ultimately, the study did show that drones can be used to quantify densities of actively swimming sharks and rays in coral reef habitats at a relatively low cost and over short periods of time. From shark surveys to collecting whale snot, drones are a unique tool being utilized within the scientific community. And I believe over the coming years, we will probably see a rise in their application and use. Well, guys, thank you very much for listening to the second episode. I would love to hear your thoughts and feedback on this episode. And if you would like to recommend a specific species of the week, or you have a news article that you come across, or even a scientific journal you would like me to talk about, then please tweet me or send me an email. The links are in the podcast description. And thanks again for listening. Hope you guys have a awesome week, and look out for the next episode next week on Sunday.